but the... Okay, so when you want it, you want it all. So there it's all. Just try and make it comfortable.
Yeah.
TV, we're going to start in 1 minute. Good afternoon. This is a continuation of the Louisville Metro Council Budget Committee hearings on the FY23 capital and operating budgets. Today we will hear from Youth Transitional Services. A little bit of housekeeping first. Councilman Winkler has an excused absence this afternoon. Councilman Triplett has told me he will be a little bit late. Vice Chair Kramer is here. He was just at a meeting. He will be back in a minute. I'm the committee chair, Bill Hollander. Also with us are our committee members and other council members, Engel, McCraney, Chambers Armstrong, George, Piagentini, Arthur. Join us virtually are council members Bowens and Fowler, and I think I've called everybody who is here. As I said, this is the hearing on youth transitional services. We just have one agency that we will hear from today, and the director of YTS is Major Andora Davis. Ms. Davis, the floor is yours.
Good afternoon, everyone. Andora Davis, Youth Transitional Services Director. Want to start off with our equity statement, and it says that Youth Transitional Services is dedicated to ensuring equitable treatment of juveniles who may be served by our facility while creating an environment that is inclusive of all people while remaining committed to furthering racial equity in our community. Our mission statement says Youth Transitional Services will ensure the safety of detained juveniles and staff who transport them, protect the public safety through appropriate security and supervision practices, and reduce the liability exposure of those who are responsible for transporting detained youth. I also wanted to say who we are and how we started. With the closure of Youth Detention Services, Youth Transitional Services was formed. The county, Jefferson County, has a statutory obligation to ensure that juveniles appear before a judge, that juveniles, if they're detained in that county, they have to appear before that judge. So Youth Transitional Services was formed to ensure that we have our youth transported with the collaboration of DJJ to appear before the judge in Jefferson County. Our organizational chart, we have our administrative division, our court process division, and then we have our transportation services, and I will go into that a little further later. Did want to provide some stats that were asked of you all. So our transportation unit, what do we do? Again, we transport juveniles back and forth to court from other counties within the state of Kentucky, depending on what county that they've been housed at, per DJJ's classification. So when we look at our numbers from July 21 to December 21, we say that we have transported 480 juveniles to and from court. The specifics are on the screen, and then we've transported 228 juveniles to or from out of county. Daily, we keep stats on how many juveniles we transport. So that's how we keep a tally of our numbers. We keep a tally of what detention facility they go to we keep a tally of the vehicle mileage that we use and how many staff go out to transport those kids to and from. Again, this is the transportation numbers that we have from July 2021 to June 2021. And as you can see, it's 234 juveniles transported to and from court and 81 juveniles transported out of county. We also have a court process unit. And again, I'll take the time to explain that. Our court process unit, we originally had five sworn staff, and our court process unit works with the courts. They're responsible for delivering dependency packets to juveniles and to their parents to ensure that they appear in court when their court dates are scheduled. Also, our court process unit is responsible for interstate compact orders. So if DJJ identifies that a kid is in another county or in another state, our sworn staff, court process officers, they will go to those other counties or other states and transport those children back to Jefferson County. As you can see, the numbers provided from July of 2021 through December 2021, the packets that have been processed. We've broken those down into criminal, individual, dependency, and that will equal up to 1,085 packets processed. Then we'll look at January of 2022 to March of 2022. We have delivered 625 packets. Our retention rate, we have 24 full-time staff, and we have a breakdown of the staff. According to Metro HR, and our current status, our retention rate is at 100%, is at 100% through FY23. One of the questions that was asked is, how did COVID impact our department? When COVID originally hit in March of 2020, we were fortunate enough to have our staff deployed to other metro agencies to help with frontline services. Upon them coming back to youth transitional services, things have gotten better. We did have six staff that were affected by COVID, and roughly we spent about $18,000 in non-scheduled overtime. And that doesn't include fringe, but we're managing that overtime as much as we can. The biggest thing that I want to talk about is our youth screening center. First of all, I want to say thank you to the entire Metro Council for allowing us to do this and for allotting the ARP funding for us to be able to make this happen. So we have a go live date of May the 29th. I know that we was originally tasked with this in November. It's really been a challenge to try to get capable staff. And as we all know, we just have a shortage in the work staff everywhere, but May the 29th is the day that we go live. We have been working with DJJ. We've worked with Juvenile Justice Work Group that was recommended by you all to come up with best practices for this. We will be housed in the current location of 720 West Jefferson, which is located in the census tract area. Our children that come in, of course, they're not going to be detained, but what happens is the police officer, law enforcement, will contact the CDW, court designated worker, in which we have allotted a space for them to come into our facility. So there should not be any more virtual interviews with the children. They should be able to lay eyes on those kids, which is the best interest of them. So law enforcement will contact the CDW. The CDW will then inform the officer to bring the youth down to the screening center. They will be at the screening center while they go through the court process assessment. This is a safe space that we've provided. We all know that since the closure of youth detention, there has not been a space for law enforcement to bring youth, and so we're excited about this. We will have medical staff there that will be able to evaluate those children upon entry to our facility. We have provided our space for our court-designated workers to be able to interview them privately. Of course, in the ordinance, we were granted a 5 additional court process staff, so we will have sworn peace officers that will take custody of those juveniles from sworn officers, law enforcement officers. We will be able to provide those children with, again, a safe space with food. If they're hungry, they'll have a place to go to the restroom if they need to do that. They'll be able to sit within the comforts and confines of a safe space and not have to worry about what's going to happen or am I going to be able to use the restroom? Am I going to be able to get something to eat? Because, of course, we know that's not been happening sporadically while they're in the custody of the police now. I do want to informally invite you all. We will be having a open house, but I want to have an open house for Metro Council to come over and view our facility, and you all will be receiving that via email. Hopefully, you all be able to attend on May the 27th. That's a Friday, and that will be reserved for your council only. just so you could come in and see what we're talking about and ask any other questions that you may have from that. And that's all I have. Thank you so much.
So just to refresh everybody's recollection for the public, the Juvenile Assessment Center was funded in the second round of American Rescue Plan funding at $3 million to fund operating costs estimated to be $1 million a year. So this is one of those programs that we have funded for 3 years with American Rescue Plan money. There's also, has been some renovation to the building to get ready for this?
Yes, sir, there has been some renovation.
Will there be more coming?
Yes, sir, there will be more coming. The entire facility will be renovated. However, we've been working with the architects and Dennis Arthur, who is a contractor through Metro Government, to make sure that we have the correct space and the needs that we have to have.
So there is also just in the capital budget, Project 18 is $3 million to continue, I guess, the renovation of this building, to convert it not just for the Youth Assessment Center, but also to the Sheriff's Office. That's the plan, I guess, Monica?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, this is not directly relevant to the FY23 budget, and we'll get to some of that in a minute, but on the Youth Assessment Center, is your current view, having seen what you've hired, what the assessment is, I realize you haven't started, so it may change, is the $1 million, are you going to need the full $1 million a year to operate the Youth Assessment Center? Is that your current thought? And will that amount be sufficient?
I'm sorry, can I defer this to Peter Niehaus? He's my fiscal administrator.
Absolutely. Anyone who wants to answer, if they'll just step up to the microphone and introduce themselves, please.
Fiscal administrator with OMB. To answer your question, I believe the award was in November, so we are already well into this fiscal year. I do believe the project will take $3 million over the course of 3 years, but whether that is a standard $1 million per year is still up for debate.
Okay. You're basically saying you're starting late, so the money will last longer than you thought. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Councilman Piacentini.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, I want to start with thanking you all for the work you do. I know the current situation with, youth crime in our city is not good. And it's hard enough just to deal with adults committing crimes. I can only imagine dealing with children every day and juveniles. And what that does to you. So thank you for your work. It's very appreciated, and it's critical for the city. Let me just opine for a second about, again, for the public. What I'll broadly say is, although I've written that I've been happy with some of the things that happened in this past legislative session in Frankfort, I joined the mayor's administration in lobbying for additional money, particularly capital money, for facilities related to this issue in the city, and miraculously that did not make it into this budget. I was extremely disappointed by that. And just for reference, this city, and particularly the greater service area, is north of 25% of the state's population, and the nearest youth detention facility, which is the state's obligation, is nowhere near here. And it's quite absurd, if you look at the data, that we don't get that. And going back to the budget debates that we had years ago, it had to do with us making up the difference, and that difference in budgetary obligation was getting bigger every year because the state wasn't meeting their obligation in the city. So I'm still disappointed by that, and I'm hoping the legislature hears this as a plea to look at the numbers, see the need that the city has, and meet their obligations related to Louisville on this issue. Related to this particular budget ask, I do see, and this might be for LaTanya or Monica, I'm not sure who wants to grab this one, but in LaTanya, your document where you always have a section where you have prior capital expenditure, capital line items for each department, there are a couple for youth detention that go back to fiscal year 17, maybe this other one is fiscal year, might be 17 or 16. One is down to 22 cents remaining budget. Obviously, that's a done deal. The other two are for, quote, security system upgrades and Sallyport roof project, obviously for the prior building. It adds up to about $350,000 of, quote, remaining budget. Are we going to be able to pull that back and or repurpose that, or what are we doing with that money?
My name is LaTanya Bell. I'm the Council Financial Analyst. As far as that capital status report for fiscal year 22, as of March 31st, 22, that information that you're looking at came from a condensed spreadsheet that was provided by OMB. That's what you're looking at currently. But as far as if those funds would be used, that would be a more appropriate question for Monica to answer.
Thank you. Monica?
Yeah, for the record, Monica Harmon, Office of Management and Budget. Those funds are available for to be used on that facility. That's what they were appropriated for. If they can be used in this improvement project, that would be a question for Mark in terms and his staff in terms of the improvements for there. But right now, the existing project is not necessary, but could be diverted based on needs for that facility improvement.
That's kind of what I'm getting at. So, LaTanya, maybe we just want to put an asterisk next to this, and maybe we want to put into the amended budget, you know, do we have to legislate that, or is that something we can just do?
I think we can just do it, but I think it's important to make sure that Mark is aware that that would be done, because it's currently in Dora's budget, so it would have to be. We'll coordinate that.
Okay, yeah. Either way, whether we do it legislatively or do it through the executive, I do want to make sure that the money is recouped. We repurpose it. We understand that's being repurposed. We're tracking it, right?
Sure.
Obviously, that was dedicated to youth services. It still seems to be needed, but just in a different way. So let's make sure we're using that. And then, Major, could you talk a little bit more about what, once this facility opens, and I don't know if it's the one that's opening on March 29th or if there'll be a different one that's coordinated with the sheriff's office, but once, will that be a different building?
It'll be all in the same building, same structure, and no, okay. The sheriff will not be moving that, and it's May 29th.
Okay.
There's more work to do to get ready for the sheriff.
Got it. Okay.
I believe.
But it's the same building, though.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Once that's open and maybe even fully functional, can you talk a little bit about how that will help you all, but also how that will help LMPD, right? Officers that, you know, when they're picking up a juvenile for X issue, they're coming to you versus what they're currently doing. Can you talk a little bit operationally about how that's going to change things for you?
Yes. So when we move into the facility, first of all, we always want to remember that juveniles have to have sound and sight separation from adults. So with the renovations that have been talked about in the building, we will have our own Sallyport where the law enforcement officers will still be able to bring the juveniles in on the rear side of the facility and bring them up to be processed. So it will not hinder the process of either my department or the sheriff's, but having the law enforcement officers having a place to bring the youth is going to be great. So that will be a plus.
Because I understood that currently, because of the current circumstances, it requires LMPD to take additional time to transfer juveniles. Is that correct? I see a lot of nodding heads, so it sounds like it's
correct. Yes, sir. They have to transport them to us from wherever they're at. That's okay. The additional time. But after they bring them into our facility and medical staff clears them, unlike what's happening now, the law enforcement officers will be able to get right back out on the street. Currently, they may have a juvenile in their custody from 2 hours to 6 hours to 8 hours. That will no longer be the practice come May the 29th. They'll be able to bring those juveniles, drop them off with another sworn peace officer, and get back out on the street.
Sounds good. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Councilman Arthur.
Thank you, Chair. I'm interested in an update about your equity goals. I know last year a goal that you had, it seems like a similar goal this year, was to have those quarterly meetings and those trainings. I'm interested to know what someone from the staff learned, and maybe someone who learned something that they weren't as aware of before. When we talked last year, you talked about better informing staff about racial issues in the city. So I'd just be interested to hear a testimonial about what someone has learned and maybe what you anticipate to learn this next fiscal year.
Yes, I want to address the second goal that we have added this year, and we did add a goal of to utilize the racial equity toolkit to determine the impacts of new projects and initiatives, mainly because we know that we have in the screening center come open and we're going to have a little bit more initiatives that's going to take place. But I would like to introduce my assistant director, Toni Rice, to be able to speak with you about what she's learned from the racial equity.
Thank you. Toni Rice, Assistant Director for Youth Transitional Services. And just to answer you, Mr. Author, things that we have learned over the year is inclusion, most of all. A lot of times you look at facilities and the minority is always African Americans. Well, the minority at Youth Transitional Services is not. So it was always trying to pull everybody to the table, have inclusion, make sure that we're asking everybody what do they think, how do they feel, even after trainings, doing evaluations just to see did we do a good job or is it something that maybe we can add, do we need to share. Leslie Brown is who conducts our stats, which is our supervisor, and she just has a boatload of knowledge, but she's so shy. So getting her into those trainings and even getting her to facilitate sometimes, what we did was rotate staff. So versus just having a training specialist or myself do the facilitation, each quarter we had a different staff get up and do the facilitation so that it was something different and everybody was included in it.
Thank you. And just a follow-up question that actually relates to that, but a little bit outside of the scope of the work that you all do, and thank you for the work that you do, by the way.
Thank you.
I'm looking at these transition numbers, January 2021 through June 2021, 234 young people transferred to and from court, 189 black, 42 white, 3 Hispanic, 1 other, overwhelmingly black, as you just pointed out, almost 80% black. During those transitions or during those sit-downs, what did you learn directly from the youth that might help inform what we fund when it comes to youth programs outside of your facilities?
What did we learn? We learned that they do not have things to do during the summer. There are not a lot of jobs. They talked to us about hoping that maybe JCPS could offer some type of resume building. A lot of youth do not even know how to write a resume. And so when we were youth detention services, we offered those services to youth so that when they got out back onto the street and rehabilitated, they had a piece of paper to go to somebody and say, hey, I have been arrested, but I do have a resume, and this is what I learned because we were teaching them trades there. So those are some of the things that they had stated. And I know that ARP funding, during the mayor's address, he stated that he would be opening up more recreational centers and stuff. But just getting some of these ambassadors to go out into the community and invite the youth back in, they just don't know that they're open. They don't know what they have available for them to do to get off the streets. No problem. Thank you.
Let me follow up on that just a minute, because I think that's really interesting. Do you work at all or communicate at all with OSHN? With the Office for Safe and Healthy Neighborhoods about that kind of communication out in the community? Are you in communication with them?
As Youth Detention Services, we did have a very close working relationship with the Office of Safe and Healthy Neighborhoods. Currently, we're rebuilding that relationship. Unfortunately, but fortunately, Carla Kirby, who was the executive administrator at Youth Detention Services, is now with the Office of Youth Development and working at OSHN. So just that working relationship, that personal relationship, we're bridging it back together. She continuously has been sending me emails about things that they have been doing in the community thus far and things that they're doing in the future. So absolutely, we will have that information to share with the children that will be coming into the screening center.
So just one other, that seems really important to me. One other question about the stats that Councilman Arthur focused on. I noticed really a pretty significant increase from you've got two periods here, January 21 to June 21, and then July 21 to December 21. It's dramatically higher. 234 juveniles transported to and from court, up to 480 in the next month, and 81 transported to out-of-county facilities, up to 228 in the next 6 months. To what do you attribute that?
Definitely, because the city is opening back up, and during COVID, a lot of these children or youth were being seen via Zoom, and so now that the city has been opening back up and the kids are getting transported back and forth to court, of course, there's more kids being placed on the docket, and we receive those dockets, and so we're just ensuring that those kids back and forth to court.
Are you seeing those same trends upward? And these numbers end in December 2021. Have you seen the same trends upward this year?
Yes, the numbers are trending upward. Yes, sir.
Okay. Councilwoman George.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Director Davis. First, I just want to recognize the work that you have done, particularly to address the gaps that were created with the closure and the disconnect that we see in our community because of the pandemic. My colleagues and I know last year we heard from the community about needs, and so I'm going to ask you about a couple of them and see if you can tell me where, if at all, they're reflected in the budget. One of the things we heard was the need for more moderate release options. Is that something that, and I think the other thing to know is, like, sometimes it's hard for us to know what falls under local purview versus what state, so feel free to educate in the way of, but do we see anything in the budget that speaks to more moderate release options and anything that youth transitional services would be providing for that?
Juveniles that have been detained, they are wards of the state, if I should say that. Currently, with the closure of youth detention services, we have no control over any type of release, who comes in, who goes to court. We just keep tally of what we do, transporting the kids back and forth to court, the mileage, things of that nature. We do have communication with the juveniles, but we do not make any definite decisions on how those children will land or how they, if they'll be released, if they'll stay. We have no control over that at all.
Okay, and so that's helpful. So the other thing we heard the need for was more local purchase options. And so is that something that we would see reflected in the budget, and is that something that would fall under local purview potentially, or tell me a little bit about that.
Can you repeat that, please?
Sure, so one of the things that we heard in the community suggested was the need for local purchase services, things like HOPE collaborative workshops. Perhaps maybe speaking to some of the needs around like resume building. Is there anything in the budget that provides those local option services?
Unfortunately, Youth Transitional Services does not have anything in their budget for that. We do not address those concerns. I mean, we are worried about them, but those are, again, something that the state has to provide for the youth. We have no control over that.
Okay. So in terms of the new youth screening center, we're not expected to see those local purchase options.
All we're doing is the screening for the mental health and those kinds of things before we transport them, correct?
Okay. And then what about support services for pre-adjudicated youth?
These are great questions, and I wish I had better answers for you. We have been working with community partners to make sure that we get information. We, as a screening center, we're just that. We're the screening center while the CDW completes their assessment. However, we've been working with community partners on getting information that we could give to juveniles and parents if they should want those services. So we had, you know, we've worked with the YMCA, we're working with Kentuckiana Works, just all the neighboring places to get that literature there. They can walk out of our screening center with a ton of literature. My staff can inform them of the different opportunities that they have. However, it has to be them deciding to do that. I'm sorry.
Excellent. And so hear me say, like, I don't mean to ask these questions to put this all on you, and I do think there's questions around what's state versus what's local. But I also think from a lay perspective, there's questions around, like, or a lot of excitement, I think, really around the potential of the youth screening center. And I think being able to say as like a hub for maybe some of these other things, because you are going to be the point of seeing community need and where the youth are. And so I think they're interesting questions to consider, and perhaps for you to share what big ideas maybe you have in the future about ways that there could be stronger collaboration at the screening center. And with that, I'll just say I'm excited about the invitation. I can't wait to come see it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
President James.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Major Davis, thanks for being here, and thanks everybody over there for the work that you all do. I just had a couple questions. Once the center is open, will you be hiring additional sworn personnel or using what you currently have to hold on to the youth once the officers leave? What's that look like?
That's a great question, and it'll be a collaboration of both. We, prior to getting the ARP funding, of course, we have 5 sworn staff that did the court process. With the ARP funding and the ordinance, we were granted 5 more positions to hire. We currently have 4, and they will graduate the academy in a couple of weeks, so we will be in have great timing to open up the screening center. We will have to collaboratively use both court process that have been out on the streets, as well as the 5 slots that we had, that we were awarded, and to ensure that we have the coverage 24/7. Prematurely, I could say probably, if everything goes well, we will be asking for more staff. But right now, we're okay with what we have.
Okay, thank you. And then I guess my next question is there anything that you all need equipment-wise that you don't have or that's not covered in this particular proposal for the budget?
No, sir.
All right. The process officers, their equipment, do we pay for that? Do they have to buy their own?
Yes, sir. We have always purchased the equipment for our court process staff, so that's included in our budget. We purchase everything except their firearms, so we provide all of that.
We don't purchase their firearms?
No, we have not in the past ever purchased the firearm for the court process officers.
Why not?
I have no answer for that. We've just never purchased it, and I could find an answer for that, but I have no answer for that right now.
Could you tell me how much that would cost? Could you send us that information?
Yes, I do have my court process supervisor here with me, Mr. Lamont Perry.
Okay.
Officer Lamont Perry, supervisor of court process unit. I could research the price of the firearms and get that information to my director.
Okay. I wish you could do that, because I think it's ridiculous that we're not buying your own firearms.
Yes, sir.
I'm sure you agree.
Yes, sir.
Yes. Next question is, how many vehicles do you all have, the vans, to transport back and forth?
Currently, we have to realize that we have the transportation unit that was already in existence, and then we have the screening center that is coming too. So currently, we have 1 large transport van. We are in the process of purchasing another. We've been working with Matt Maskey's with the vehicles to make sure that we get that. We have 5 Ford Tauruses with our transportation unit. We have ordered 3 additional sedans for the screening center. However, the process of getting that, everything has been ordered since back in November. We have a contract, of course, with Ford Services, and we just have to wait to get those. But everything has been ordered, and we'll just be using those vehicles that we currently have to transport, just coordinating and making sure that we're getting the transportation portion taken care of, as well as the screening center. But we have everything ordered as of now.
Okay, thank you. Then my next question is, the employees that work there, are they covered by a labor organization?
Yes, sir. Our entire department is covered under the ASME collective bargaining agreement.
Okay. That's all I needed. Thank you so much. Thanks for the work you do.
Thank you.
Major, I'm sure there's been a lot of effort. Have you had a lot of cooperation and training with LMPD and the other law enforcement agencies in the county about how this is going to work? May 29th is coming up soon. Could you talk a little bit about how that's going?
Yes, sir. We've been working closely with Colonel Judah and Colonel Healy, I think that's what his name is. We've been working with them. We just had a meeting yesterday talking about getting the information out, going to different roll calls, and just explaining to law enforcement officers how this is going to work, when it's going to go live. So we have been working with them very closely. And like I said, we will start as soon as next week. We'll be going to ComStats on Thursday of next week to get that out to the commanders of all of the districts for LMPD, and then we'll start going to the roll calls to explain it to the officers.
Thank you. And of course, for the public who may be listening, a major reason to do this was to be able to get officers back on the street quicker. So it is a way to help an understaffed department. Councilman Kramer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a couple, and first, of course, thanks for all that you all do. We are anxiously looking forward to you guys being able to start the work that you really anticipated and the reason you do what you do. Are there any YTS staff that are still assigned to RCS?
No, sir.
So you have all of your staff back?
Yes, sir.
Great, thanks. I just want to be sure I heard this right, and I'm pretty sure I did. So in less than 3 weeks, we will be able to transport youth involved in gun charges and more serious crimes to facilities for holding until their court date.
Yes, the direction is that the law enforcement officer calls the CDW. At that time, the CDW will instruct them to bring them either to the screening center or take them directly to Jefferson Regional.
Okay. And earlier you had said that the choice about where a youth might go wasn't up to you. Who does decide whether a youth is sent or transported to a holding facility to wait trial, or if they're released to their parents, or if they're placed under, I guess you'd say, home incarceration? Who makes that decision?
Yes, sir. The court designated workers, they have the screening assessment, and depending on how the youth scores on the assessment, and I'm not 100% sure on the numbers, but depending on how they score on their assessment, the CDW communicates with the judge, and then that decision is made by the offices of the court, the administration office of the court, and after they take the assessment, depending on where they score at, that'll determine if they're going to go to a home to a legal guardian, if they're going to go to alternative, or if they're going to go to detention.
So the way it works right now, I mean, I know, again, May 29th, but the way it works right now, we aren't even moving into that because there's no place to take them. So basically, police officers are being told, if you want to spend 6 hours with this youth, go ahead and arrest them. But if you need to get back out on the Great Lawn because we're having Derby festivities and there's a lot going on, and yes, this kid has a gun, but we don't have 6 hours to take you off the street, those problems go away on May 29th.
That's the hope.
Okay, good. That's encouraging. Thank you. And then finally, and I think Councilman Yates kind of hit on this a little bit, but I was wondering, right now I'm looking at your staffing, and it's as of 5/21, you have seven folks who are in administrative or supervisory roles, and you have 17 who are being supervised. When do you anticipate that proportion shifting, or do you? Is it going to be the norm that you have that many supervisors for that few employees?
Can I defer this to
sure.
Ms. Rice?
Thank you.
Assistant Director Tony Rice. So while we do have what appears to be seven supervisors, it does not work that way. We went from having 118 staff to 24 staff. So my job is assistant director,
I was the quality assurance supervisor. I was also the training specialist. I was also the internal investigator. So, I mean, while it appears that we have a lot of supervisors, we have three shifts. So you have a first shift supervisor, a second shift supervisor, a third shift supervisor. You have myself, Major Davis. You have an administrative coordinator, and you have a quality assurance supervisor. So it appears that way, but everybody's like on a different shift. Nobody's like crossing shifts. The only person that's really there at the same time is probably myself and Major Davis, and we're wearing about 8 hats apiece.
Right. I don't mean to imply that the positions you guys are in aren't important. I get that, and that's the reason my question wasn't so much to say, why do you have so many? My question was really, do you see that proportion changing? In other words, as we start transporting more youth,
we hope
to
see
anticipate or more staff. That we're going to hire more staff.
Yes, yes. The hope is that in July, when we come back for budget, that we're definitely going to be asking for more staff. We want to get it off the ground, start looking at the numbers, measuring the success, and then once we get those numbers and we can get something in black and white to you guys, we will definitely be coming back and asking for more staff.
Yeah, that's my question. Yes. You see at some point in the future a shift. Right.
We're not sure. We want to make sure the numbers are right before we're overstaffed and don't have a lot of youth coming, you know, streamlining through the facility. But thank you so much for asking.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you. And then this is, I don't know how budget related it is. In some small way, I suppose it is. But I know all of us are well aware of the supply chain issues and getting anything, right? It's not a big secret that automobiles has been at the top of the list of things that people just can't get their hands on. I also know that we, as a city, had more employees in certain departments, let's say LMPD, and so we have fewer officers now, and yet we have some of the same equipment. So I'm wondering if there has been conversation or what the possibility is that you guys might be able to borrow for a short period of time, vehicles from either LMPD or the sheriff's office in order to be able to transport. Because I believe each of those agencies has vehicles that, because of their staffing issues, aren't being used.
Yes, sir, that's a great question also. And we have discussed with Matt Maskey, Matt Golden, my chief, we have been discussing how the vehicles come in. Is it any way we could swap? If we're getting the same cars that are coming in, can we retrieve those cars that are coming in for instance, LMPD? Can we get those cars, and then when ours come in, we give them or switch back out? So, yes, we have been discussing how we'll be able to get that equipment in sooner.
Good. Thank you. I would, and I'm sure you anticipate even more than I do, but I would anticipate on May 29th you guys are going to be quite busy for some time to come. And so I just want to make sure, and I know that we can't do anything with the budget to make them deliver the cars more quickly.
Right.
I wish we could.
Thank you.
Councilwoman McCraney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Director Davis, for being here. And Monica, thank you so much, and staff and support. I just want to make sure I do understand. When you say you're basically the like the middleman, you don't do any type of cause and effect or any type of rehabilitation or any of that at this point, correct?
That's correct.
Now, will you be doing that once you have the facility in place to help, I guess, help the youth and try to understand root causes so that we can do some combating rather than just transporting and shipping in, shipping out?
That's a great question. And one of the reasons why we changed the name to Screening Center instead of Assessment Center, what we have looked at benchmarks across the United States, what does an assessment center really do and what does a screening center do? An assessment center, they do have the resources and the staff that will do intervention, that will do mental health counseling, referrals. They work, the juveniles are court ordered to those facilities for services. This is not what we are. We are strictly a screening center, assisting police officers to be able to get back out on the street and not have to have those youth in their facility for periods of time. Hopefully, it is my hope, and I would love to start an assessment center in the city of Louisville. I would love to do that. That would take a lot more resources, a lot more funding, a lot more knowledge to get that taken care of. But I don't count it out of the future, but just currently, that is the reason why we stuck with the screening center, to ensure people know that that's definitely what we're doing and not assessment.
So we're not trying to get back to where we were when it was closed a couple of years ago?
No, we're not trying to be a detention center.
Okay.
Yes.
And so when you look at these numbers, the 480 juveniles transported to and from court, 228 juveniles transported to and from out of county, are all of those juveniles Jefferson County juveniles?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And we don't transport any other juveniles from any other county? Or have you contracted with other entities, other cities to do that work?
If I understand what you're saying, a juvenile is detained or arrested in Jefferson County, and because the state has taken over, that kid may go to, let's say, Adair County.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll go get that kid that was detained in Jefferson County and bring them back from Adair. But we do not transport children that live primarily in another county. Those, all these numbers, these kids have a Jefferson County address.
So, okay, and I do, I get it. You just told me again, you are basically transporting, and I understand what your facility mission is. But now, what do we do as a community that we see these numbers, 429 males, 51 females, 391 African Americans, 78 Caucasians? We see these numbers, so once they get transported to and from court, who's really seeing after how we can help these youth? I mean, what concern is it of yours at this point, or is it not? Did you just basically do what you do?
It's always a concern of me. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, because I have a passion for juveniles, and it's always a concern. And when the short amount of time that we have the juveniles in our custody, we are trying to educate them. We are trying to tell them about resources that they may have once they reenter back into society. However, again, with the closing of youth detention services, those programs were taken away from Jefferson County and placed with the state. And therefore, we have no jurisdiction to create programs without the approval and agreeance of the state. So we can only do what we can do while we have them for that short time. And that's, you know, that's why it's important that we have information from our community partners. When children come into our screening center, we want to be able to give them, you could go to the NIA Center for Counseling, you could go to University of Louisville for Counseling, this, you could go to Ocean, and this is what they'll do. We want to be able to be that hub to give them information. Mm-hmm. However, we don't have the authority to create programs to ensure that they're getting, you know.
I guess I'm just trying to get at, when you're detaining them for 6 hours, 5 hours, 2 hours, 1 hour, what is really happening? What is going on? You're just kind of looking at them? I'm just trying to get an understanding.
Tony Rice again, Assistant Director. I just want to be kind of clear on what we're saying. Once LMPD apprehends them and they're brought in, it's against the law for us to ask them any type of questions when they come in, because they have attorneys. We don't, anything that they say can be held against them in the court of law. So outside of providing a safe space within the census tract, providing light snacks and somewhere warm and with people that they know, that's about all within the scope that we can do until they are detained. And once they're detained, like you said, and we're taking them to court and we're doing stuff, we can offer services. We can say, hey, this is what's going on in the community, but it actually is the state's responsibility at this point. I've been with youth detention for 17 years. Those kids are my heart. So every time I see them, I know them. This screening center means everything to me, because I know when they see us, they know us. So it's going to bring down the steam. It's going to de-escalate them when they start seeing some of these faces. Everybody that's sitting over here has been working for youth detention for over 15 to 20 years. We're the remaining staff. So they know us. When they're coming in from court, they're like, my mom knows you. Hey, are you such and such? So, I mean, that about outside of just giving them a family-oriented space, that's all we can provide. Once they closed down youth detention services, all of those services were taken from us. There's nothing else within the law that we could do to offer them anything else outside of brochures. We are sitting down with YMCA every day. In the event we have parents that can't come to the center, we have offered to take those youth home. We will be offering those services. The court process officers are trained to step, you know, pivot and parry in and outside of homes to take them home. We also have, like Major stated, contracted with YMCA, so in the event parents can't come or it's not safe for them to go home, they will be going to YMCA, and they have offered to give those wraparound services and give them case managers and follow up and provide the data to us monthly. So once we start receiving that data, we'll be absolutely provided to you guys on any services or anything that they've offered. When we receive it, we'll be glad to give it to you as well.
Wonderful. That's exactly what I needed to hear. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.
President James.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to follow up a little bit. So the vests that they wear, the ballistic vests, the process officers, do we provide those?
Yes, sir.
Good. Flashlights?
Yes, sir.
Taser?
Yes, sir.
All right. That's all I need to know.
Everything he has on, man, everything is the weapon, and we will be researching about the weapon.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Councilman Arthur.
I want to go back to what Councilwoman McCraney was talking about. I know you're screening center. As a screening center, do you have the capacity and the budget to make referrals to other agencies? And I want to be real clear about that. I'm not talking about creating programs. I'm not talking about managing or operating the programs. I'm talking about somebody picks up the phone and calls Dr. Monique Williams and says, hey, we have X amount of people over here who need access to everything that we just heard our youth desperately need. We fund those programs. So it doesn't sound like we need to go back to the detention center. Some people might argue against that. But if we fund the programs and the resources elsewhere in another agency, it sounds like we just need to build a bridge. So do you have the capacity and the authority to build that bridge and make those referrals?
Legally, to make a referral, I'm going to say no. But we can make those referrals. And when I say that, again, because all programming comes from DJJ, but the communication and the working relationship that we have with Ocean, we can have her staff members, because those staff members have participated in a CANS check, which is a central registry for child abuse and child neglect. So those people can come into our facility and give their information. But it's a fine line, because the kids are not detained and cannot discuss anything that pertains to their case, of course, what Ms. Rice said. So we can bridge a relationship, and we can have people to come in to actually show them, and especially those kids that are going to be released to a parent. They're not going to be detained, so absolutely we can have that conversation and give them those resources, so when they leave out of our door and going back home, they have the know and the resources to go and see what services.
I appreciate you making that commitment. And I can't speak for Dr. Monique Williams, but I'm sure they'd be interested in that partnership. And maybe for the purposes of us making sure that bridge is locked in, maybe there's a standard operating procedure that both of the agencies need to have kind of just written. This is how we make sure youth have resources that come through the screening center. But thank you for making that commitment.
Yes.
Councilwoman George.
Thank you, Chair. And I think just to maybe clarify, so if, say, for instance, you have a youth, the CDW does the screener, it doesn't warrant, they're not going to be detained. The DSI is not high enough. You contact grandma. Grandma's coming to get the youth. Grandma's asking for services. Like, I understand, like, you can't mandate services. No one's asking for that. But grandma's asking for services, and you, through the screener, regardless of the score, it flags some challenges. It says there's a pattern of risk and that this young person needs something. Is what I'm hearing, based on Councilman Arthur's question, that some level of service provision, someone will be on staff to make those referrals and to be that bridge with the other providers in the community?
We can make that happen. As of now, no, we don't have anyone that's assigned to be there to bridge that gap. But because of the concern, we can start a relationship with other agencies, community partners that could come in or be or give us literature so that we can present that to children and to their parents.
Thank you. I would encourage you to let us know what you need for that bridge, because again, if we're going to be like as efficient as possible as a system and not just turning young people out that we know they're going to come back at some point, you guys know the needs in the community. You're seeing them. I was inspired by what you said. The kids know you. I think we could be missing an opportunity. And again, I understand you're not mandating services to them, but I venture to say you see a lot of relatives, parents who are picking up the kids who need something, and you guys are in a, you know, the services and resources in the community as well. So we want to make sure that you have someone on staff that is their job, maybe, or that is their level of expertise. If you don't have that, to be that bridge, so let us know what you need. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I don't see anyone else in the queue. I do want to ask one question, maybe for Monica. It goes back to Councilman Piacentini's point at the beginning that we would have all liked to have seen some budgetary consideration for more services in Jefferson County from the state. We didn't see that. I presume there are continuing discussions, at least, with the administration about doing anything that can get done. Is that fair?
That is correct. We, as a matter of fact, the administration is meeting with the Senate committee to interim committee to discuss this issue. And while we will not see any impact in this fiscal year, budget 23, there's hope that we can etch out some funding to see this improvement, but there is no commitment at this time. So we're still pursuing it.
Well, I think that'll continue to be important for council members and also for the new administration. I don't see anyone else in the queue. It's been a very interesting meeting, and I want to thank you, Major Davis, and everyone in the audience for all of your service and for your testimony today. I've learned a lot, maybe about some opportunities that we have, and we'll certainly take you up on visiting your new center. Thank you.
Thank you.
Without objection, we're adjourned.
Might realize to protect the health and safety of our communities, and the work is really quite extraordinary. It is our mission to provide quality wastewater, stormwater, and flood protection services to protect public health and